post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to The Near Post. My name's Eamon Flanagan. We're talking football across the Australian Community Radio Network. And with me in the studio tonight, delighted to have Russ Gibbs back, fit, fresh, ready to talk the talk.
Thanks very much, Eamon. Looking forward to it.
And also delighted to have alongside Russ, Technical Director of Capital Football, Ian Shorey. Welcome. You're going to give us your expert knowledge and thoughts and insights on all things football tonight. We're looking forward to it.
Thanks, Eamon. I'd like to help out tonight, and I'm looking forward to this experience.
Good on you, Shorey. Okay, we've also got, we'll be talking about Newcastle Jets in the Asian Champions League. We've got an interview with Matildas coach Tom Samani. He's got a few things that he's got some strong opinions on, particularly on the Dubbo girls who aren't allowed to play men's football this year. And as mentioned, we've got Ian Shaw with the Technical Director of Capital Football, who will, amongst other things, will be talking about the national curriculum as we work our way through that, an exciting development. And Shorey will also be with us in the local part of the show, so stay with us for that. We've got all the big issues, quiz dedications and more. You can catch us on, send us an email, nearpost2xx@gmail.com, or catch the podcast on the blog at www.nearpost.blogspot.com.
Hi, my name is May. I am 7. My favourite soccer player is Lucas Neal.
If you're going to the Near Post,
arrivez première.
Dedicate the show as always, every week. This week no different. And this week is to one of our listeners from the Raw site, www.theraw.com. Andrew from Germany. Thanks, Andrew. Some nice words saying how he downloads the podcast every week from Germany, listens to the show, says we're doing well. So good on you, Russ. Keep up the good work, mate.
Yeah, with my German accent online.
Yeah, good luck to you, Andrew. Okay. Now, the quiz question, as I say, we have a quiz question every week. And Shorey, you've got to get straight into this as well, mate. Yeah. Name as many Jets players, Newcastle Jets players, who have or who were or have or are socceroos. Okay, so have a think about that, Shorey. Name as many Jets players as you can who have been or are socceroos.
Coast from Melbourne Victory, hear the Queensland roar. This is the Near Post, going coast to coast.
The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
All right, Shorey, we always get our guests to start the quiz because, you know, it gives them the easiest one, you know. So get you going. How many? Yeah, come on, Shorey.
Is it current?
It can be any jet since the Newcastle Jets have been formed. Is it start the age?
Okay, any so player? Griffiths boy. And,
yeah, so the young Griffiths boy named, which one?
Adam.
Yeah, we'll give you that one.
Yeah, all right, mate.
Russ, go on. You have a think about another one while Russ is on.
Joel Griffiths.
Joel Griffiths, okay, we're away, we're flying. Shorey? You've been too busy out on the park, mate. You haven't been watching telly, have you?
What about Lubo?
Lubo Milicevic, yeah.
Maddie Thompson. Sasha Petrovsky.
He doesn't play for them.
He played for the Socceroos and he plays for Newcastle, doesn't he?
You're joking.
Seems to have scored last week. So.
Yeah, he does. You're right. Yeah, good point.
He wasn't on your list, was he?
he was.
You're adding him now. I can see you writing it down.
Not true.
Who else have we got?
Who else have you got? Come on.
I said,
what about Nicky Carl? He was
fantastic. Yeah, Nicky Carl. Well done, Shorey.
That's a good effort.
Who else you got, Russ?
I've forgotten anyone.
James Holland.
Oh, yeah. What about Hoffman?
What about young Milligan? He was there at some stage.
Jason Hoffman, Mark Milligan, hasn't played. He's a young. Mark Milligan, yeah. Well, I knew you'd come through in the end. Anybody else? What about this former guy? Former older guys who started at the club?
Milicic.
Ante Milicic, that's a good one.
Andrew Durante.
Memory's coming good. We're just passing around a piece of paper now.
You're putting Russ to shame.
There's just the centre-back.
Okay,
Ante Kovic,
James Holland, Mark Milligan, Jade North, Mark Bridge, Nicky Cole, Andrew Durante, Johnson, Stuart Mishalak, Paul Okon, Ned Zelic, Matt Thompson, Nikolai Tupper-Stanley. There's a whole heap to keep going. Interestingly, how one club now has produced or has so many socceroos that have played for them, and the A-League's only been going 5 years. So clubs are starting to build up their history, but not that... So you did okay, lads. Not bad at all when you got the sheet. But anyway. Okay, we've got some news around the football world. Russ, what's happening in your end?
We've got the AFC presidency that was decided on Monday. Mohammed bin Hammam was re-elected ahead of Sheikh Salman bin Hamad bin... Issa Al Khalifa, I believe his name is, but that's big news, and I believe that was supported by Frank Lowy at FFA, and they were very happy that Mohammed bin Hammam was re-elected.
Ham Berger, the FFA technical director, is going to discuss the national curriculum in Canberra at the AIS tomorrow, or Wednesday, the 13th of May. So I think that's one of the first talks that discussions that Ham Berger will be giving. So looking forward to that. Scott McDonald doesn't score, and Celtic may have thrown away the title to a blue team. Next news item.
And they lost, did they? No pre-season cup this year, but obviously on Monday, Perth Glory released their pre-season schedule, which looks quite nice. Wolverhampton Wanderers on the 10th of July, Fulham on the 15th of July, and North Queensland Fury on the 18th of July.
And of course,
Fulham playing the Gold Coast as well on the 8th of July as well. So that's a superb stuff.
Not to forget, Celtic are also coming to play Brisbane in July, and Middlesbrough may be coming to...
And Barcelona as well, maybe.
...play Sydney. I think we're related. We've got down to Middlesbrough now. apparently, Middlesbrough might be coming to Canberra to play the on the 20s and also to Sydney FC. Mark Viduka, has he kept Newcastle in the Premiership? Overnight, he was in reasonable form. According to reports, he was man of the match. Not in the game I saw, but anyway... They got a result against one of the poorest sides ever seen in the EPL. Brad Jones is Middlesbrough.
Who are coming here, you just said.
I know they are. Yeah, they're hopeless.
Changing tack to women's football, Lisa Devana scored her first goal in the new Women's Professional Soccer League for the Washington Freedom in a 3-3 draw with St. Louis Atletico on the weekend.
And one for the 2014 World Cup campaign. Dario Vidicic scored again for Nuremberg, so one to watch as he seems to be scoring reasonably regularly, and they may get promoted. Milos Jadowski booted out of Derby. Will he go to Asia or maybe to the Central Coast Mariners?
And Manny Muscat from the Wellington Phoenix has been selected for international duty for Malta. He's been selected for the squad for matches against the Czech Republic and a World Cup qualifier against Sweden.
And Aussie Joe Simonic is 1 point off the title in Germany. Over 70,000 watch Joe's side Hertha Berlin keep the pressure on Wolfsburg. So there's only a few games left in that league. So good luck, Joe. And Curver coach and Australia boss Jason Langser. He was in the stands watching the Newcastle Borough game last night. He rang me from the train from between London and Newcastle. And I said to him, better get up there quick to teach those guys some skills because they were struggling. But obviously he did the trick. His pre-match warm-up clearly worked. And the guys, they won 3-1. Next stop for Jason. He's a few days back in Canberra. And then he's off to Mumbai to launch the Curver programme in India. Not a bad gig, Jace. And I've got a couple of chants. English Premier League chants of the week. Liverpool fans to the former Match of the Day TV host, now Newcastle manager Alan Shearer. As his team were getting thrashed by Liverpool 3-0, they shouted, "You should have stayed on the telly."
Yes. They should have stayed on the telly.
And the other one was the United fans to Middlesbrough shouting, "You're going down with the Shearer."
Brilliant.
So, any more?
And Rhys Williams, Australia or Wales?
He's chosen Australia.
Apparently he has, and with a name like that, you'd think he might have chosen Wales.
And Sydney FC MacArthur Rams sold out, 3,000 for the first pre-season game.
Brilliant.
So good. That's heap of news, Ross. Any more?
Heap of news. I've got one other thing in the Women's League, Women's Professional League. Colette McCullum and Sarah Walsh played in the 1-0 loss for the Sky Blue FC against the FC Gold Pride.
What's up? My name is Ramsey. My favourite team is Juventus, and you're listening to New Post.
Socceroos in Asia, will they make it to the Cup? The Near Post will wish them luck. The Near Post will wish them luck.
We're talking Asian Champions League. We're talking Newcastle Jets. We covered the Central Coast Mariners last week. They've gone out of the tournament anyway, so they played last Tuesday, so we chatted about them. Newcastle Jets, they got a result, Russ. Good to see.
They did, yeah. 2 goals in the last couple of minutes from Sasha Petrovsky and Sean Rooney doing the damage for Newcastle, beating Beijing 2-1. And 3 Aussies on the score sheet, obviously, with Ryan Griffiths netting for Beijing as well.
Yeah, and your old mate who you've been talking up all year, Sean Rooney. Yeah, good to see a young guy getting a fantastic goal, I thought.
Yeah, not quite as expected. We were talking him up when Sydney FC were having problems scoring goals, and he was banging them in for the youth team, and we were suggesting that perhaps he should be given the opportunity at Sydney to get on the field and start scoring some goals. And as it was, Newcastle took a chance on him, and they've been repaid with an absolute cracking finish. And he was only on the field for, barely a few moments. And to take his goal in the manner he did showed belated years, really.
It looked, that's what the Asian Champions League will be, hopefully, in the future all about. I mean, it was exciting. There was a great finish to the game. The crowd looked to be, there wasn't a particularly big crowd there, but fantastic atmosphere at the end. And the Aussie team coming home. And a young boy, Sean Rooney, got in a chance that, let's face it, a few years ago, Australian boys wouldn't have got. So suddenly he scored the winner in a game like that. Fantastic. Hopefully he'll go on. Maybe we've found the real striker again.
could well have. And they showed a lot of character, Newcastle, to come back from 1-0 down in a game they really needed to win, considering that we'll talk about it later, that their next game is obviously away to the team that's sitting just below them in the table, the Ulsan Honda. They needed to win the match. They were 1-0 down. They showed a lot of composure. And credit to Sasha Petrovsky as well, coming back after his penalty miss a couple of weeks ago to score an absolute belter.
It'd be good to see Newcastle go through. But, I mean, they're in disarray. If you read all the reports in the paper this week, Lubo Milicevic, who I'm a huge fan of, I think he's going to be fantastic if he stays in the A-League. You know, it's great to have a player of his class on the ball coming out, and you know, to me, he's as big a signing as Robbie Fowler in terms of football, the influence that he might bring to the game. And certainly, when you see him in the press, whatever he says in the press always grabs a headline, and we need that. But he's done a real go. He's done a real go at his own chairman. Not a wise move, you would think, but that's Lubo. But he's really got stuck into the travel plans, and you know, he's saying like they're travelling 32 hours from Japan when, you know, they should only be, I don't know, 10-hour flight. And I guess there's cost factors involved, and now the players are up in arms that they're not getting bonuses. The Beijing side were offered $4,000 a game in the Asian Champions League, and you know, Con's sort of saying, well, you know, we pay you for 12 months of the year, that's your salary. And the guys are saying, well, they want $1,500. So Newcastle had a lot of problems, a lot of players have left. What are your thoughts for us on that?
It's you mean, excuse me a second. Lubo, obviously being a more experienced player, is probably just saying a lot of what of the other players are thinking. And being, you know, having the ability that he's got, the stature that he has within the game, he feels that he can come out and say that sort of thing. And maybe, you know, someone of that quality saying that sort of thing, maybe Newcastle will sit up and take notice. But to have a go at your chairman in that respect, you know, it's asking for trouble, really, from someone who hasn't had the easiest of rides since he's been there.
No, they're saying they owe money, the Newcastle club owe money to the players, superannuation, that sort of thing. And there is a meeting planned for this week with the PFA. But there's all sorts of talk in the press about, you know, strikes and not playing the next game. But it's not good. I mean, with Adelaide and Brisbane being taken over by the FFA, and Newcastle clearly in some financial difficulties, I would think, it's not looking great for the A-League, really.
Well, I think you've got to take it into consideration with the times we're living in at the moment. In sport and across Australia itself isn't in the best of health. There's a lot of other codes that are struggling with numbers and attendances and money. I believe the AFL teams are being given handouts left, right and centre to keep them afloat, and as are the rugby league teams. So it's no different for them to have three teams that are struggling a little bit financially. I don't think it's too much of a burden. What's your thoughts, Shawley?
Look, I think it's a situation the A-League finds itself. We started these teams, and you have teams with one owner, either supported by construction companies or other businesses. And as you mentioned before, we're actually in that situation in a world environment where markets are changing. So I can see how it has the effect on the A-League, but I think the FFA has done the right thing and is supporting the whole concept of keeping all teams floating. And I think we might ride this through. I think they've done the right thing.
I think you're right, Shawley. I mean, if we can keep all teams floating, which is something we've never been able to do in the past, and as long as the FFA are in a position to do that, then...
And of course, with the expansion coming in this year, we've got two new teams in Queensland, and talking, you know, two more coming in next year. It can't all be doom and gloom for the A-League if they're able to expand the league with new teams.
That's true. Now we're talking, we caught up with, we're going to change tack, talk women's football. We caught up with the Matildas coach Tom Somani when he was in Cat, or I caught up with him last week, and he's talking about the Dubbo girls and the youth, the girls in the youth programme at the National Championships, the style of play and the influences coming through, and this is what Tom had to say.
Tom, you're at the National Championships recently, the under-14 girls team. I mean, that's not that much younger, some of those players, than the youngest Matildas team. How did you see the girls' performance across the country?
Generally pleased in a couple of areas. I think you've seen some effect on futsal in women's play, as in you know, a lot better sort of skills in and around the ball. Physically, players a lot better. You know, there's some tall, elegant athletes in there who, you know, look like, you know, they move well, good balance, and look like footballers, and look like, you know, people who have got good game skills. And you know, I thought the teams did really well to keep up the tempo, you know, from the first game through to the last game. So there's really sort of positive.
Is that an improvement, Tom? Like, when you see, in terms of a mass number of girls playing in a sort of a tournament like that, are you seeing a slight improvement, would you say, in physical capabilities and also skills?
Very much so. Very much so. So what I'd like to see is the next step is, you know, I'd like to now start to see more educated. I know it's hard to say this at younger age groups, but some more educated players there, players who have got, you know, that you always hope for things, but you know, that extra sort of balance of skill of time and tempo and vision and things like that in the game. The probably one difference between the girls and the boys playing is that the girls' tempo of the game tends to be the same from start to finish, and tends to be a more honest kind of roll your sleeves up and kind of play the game,
yep.
You know, go type of thing, which is terrific. You know, hopefully in the next step, what we'll start to see is that balanced out with maybe a sprinkling of really skilled and talented playmaker types of players.
Yep.
You know, that's and a little bit more sort of sophistication coming into the game.
And I guess that's what the sort of a national team at a young age for the girls will bring that focus down to the 13, 12s and 11s more who are preparing for those teams, I guess.
Definitely. And now, you know, now that we've picked a squad to come into a camp to go to this Asian tournament, then we can start working on those things with the players. You know, it's really a great step forward having this tournament, because it means we can get in there and not just identify the players, but we can also then start to get them in our system and get them working in the way that we want to work and try to develop them the way we want to develop players.
Finally, Tom, just a question on the Ashley and Nicola Sykes. Obviously not allowed to play in the men's or the boys' league in Dubbo. Do you have any thoughts of that, about whether that's appropriate for girls to play in that league or whether you think they'd benefit?
Yeah, I mean, we're still working at that. And I mean, I thought it was a disgraceful decision by the Dubbo Association. I thought it was short-sighted, narrow-minded, and typical of an association that doesn't think in the bigger picture. The two girls, and probably made the decision based for all the wrong reasons. The girls are more than capable of playing in that competition. And I think if you are from a town like Dubbo and you've got two girls who have come on the international scene in the way that the Sykes twins have come on the international scene, that football community should be doing everything in their power to give them every assistance to help them develop. And what they've done is the exact opposite to that, and it just is... It's mind-boggling why they haven't sort of allowed them to play in this competition. I'm just stunned and very disappointed and annoyed by it.
OK, well, Matilda's coach, Tom Somani, will no doubt watch that story with interest, but thanks very much for your time, Tom.
Tom Somani being very very blunt about the issue in Dubbo. Shorey, we were just talking off air that, you know, Tom's obviously got very strong opinions, but you're sort of putting a different perspective on that in terms of the girls' play. And what are your sort of thoughts generally?
Look, I think where Tom's coming from is correct in the fact that we do want to challenge these players. There's no doubt about it. I was just thinking as he was speaking, is this a precedence within the football community in Dubbo? Are they starting to look at it from maybe an insurance perspective or what might be issues there? I believe all the high-performance coaches would like their players to play at the level that would you know, sort of give a lot of resistance to their own style of play and help them develop. But I can understand the issue. It's a bit of a catch-22 issue. Do we develop the players and at what level we go to?
Yeah.
I know a number of times when I've played with the over-35s against the Matildas in camp, and that was a good hit-out, believe it or not, for both teams. Whether or not the 18-year-old is what they're after. But, you know, here comes a recommendation from the national coach that knows their technical ability.
Yeah.
So you'd have to take some...
Well, I think I imagine there'd only be one winner if the FFA are involved. So it really probably doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, I guess. Just talking more broadly about the... you know, Tom mentioned about the national championships and the women's game. And just saying that, you know, we're seeing the influence of futsal coming through to our female players. And we're also seeing the athletes. And I was at a cross-country championship yesterday where I think 6 out of 8 from the local club who won, the first 6 out of 8 were all playing soccer in the local club, so we're getting the best athletes. Is this what you're seeing, Shorey, coming through in you know, in the women's game?
I've got to agree, Eamon. We were just down at academy training the other night and just looking at women's football in general across the weekend, and we're really attracting some athletes to our game now, and that's all credit to the women in training, because they're really showing that they can develop as an athlete as much as any other female athlete in any sport. So I do believe we are attracting athletes to the game. Tom mentioned the balance of some of the players he notices already in their running styles, you know, and a lot of that comes from playing multiple sports as a child and cross-training and doing such things. And I think the women's game is just going forward in leaps and bounds, to be honest.
Is that something you would recommend, Shorey, that you know, the girls 8, 9, 10, that they keep cross-training, they keep doing other sports? Or I was talking to somebody today where, you know, you want them to develop their ball skills, so, you know, they need to do more work on the ball. It's but and obviously if they do other sports, you know, that we lose, you know, have the possibility of losing those players. It's difficult.
Look, Eamon, I think there's a definite balance required. I would love all players to do other sports. Played multiple sports myself when I was a kid, and there's no disadvantages from playing multiple sports. I know a few people that went from playing football, soccer into volleyball, and then came back a year later just such a better sportsman in our game for it. So I don't think it can be understated, training in multiple disciplines.
We're talking to FFA technical director, Capra football technical director. You've just been promoted, sorry, Ian Shaw. And
congratulations.
Yeah, well done.
That's
the good thing about the near post. We can do all sorts. And before you know it, you're up the tree. We're going to talk about the national curriculum that the FFA have launched. I guess we'll talk a little bit more about it in the local show. With Shorey, but I guess we'll just focus on one aspect of it, Shorey. The small-sided games has been a big thing that came out last year. How has it been going for you in your experience within the Canberra? And I guess then we'll talk very briefly about what changes, first of all. So first of all, how has it been going across Canberra?
I think everyone's embracing small-sided games. I look at the teams playing, I look at the work done at Woden and the Belconnen clubs, and I can see the benefits of small-sided games, and there's no doubt about it. The research put forward as to why we play small-sided games is, you know, it's very comprehensive, and it gives you a good idea that, yes, we do want our children to be getting many, many touches on the football in a game. Go back 3 or 4 years, you could take your under-9 to a game on a full-size field, and if they had 3 or 4 kicks, you'd be pretty happy, and you know, it'd be run Johnny, kick it long, because it's 30 metres to the next player. At the moment, I see the small-sided games as so advantageous in the fact that everyone is involved in the game. Mm. As a training tool, going back, I don't know, 20, 30 years, it always gets down to 6v6 on a Thursday. You just love it.
No, they're also talking about some small changes that, like, already, I mean, we've just brought the small-sided games in. A lot of people have thought, you know, there's been a fair bit of discussion, frustration, some might say anger, about the small-sided games across Australia. But I think... yeah, they're already talking about changing. I noticed Craig Foster saying we're not going to go 5v5 anymore. We're going to change that, which to me is frustrating. And they're also talking about changing the top end, the 12s. You know, they're going to move the 12s to bigger pitches and all that. Now, that to me defeats the purpose. Is this because of the national under 14 side, do you think, and that they're going to have to prepare, or is it better science?
Look, I think we're developing too. The FFA is developing the whole structure of football in Australia. We're within the AFC conference now. We have more football on our plate. Even futsal now has the opportunity to win a national title here in Australia and play overseas. So I think with the under-12s, we need changes, small-sided games. You're talking about changes to goalkeeping and such rules, stopping kicking of the ball and such. I believe them to be great changes. We want our keepers to have as better feet skills with the ball. So why not at this younger age let them play with the ball on the ground rather than picking it up? So,
well, that's a fair point, Shorey. I mean, I guess you're getting no argument here, but I'll just put, you know, a lot of people have said, well, you know, that means that when you throw the ball out as an 11-year-old, 12-year-old keeper, many players aren't capable of taking that ball further. So the ball stays in, you know, the penalty box, if there is a penalty box, and the other team then have a chance to press. So when you've got a stronger team, particularly against a weaker team, you may never get out of your own area. Now, that's just a parent or, I guess, or a coach's frustration. You know, and I can sort of understand that. You want, you know, if your team's getting flogged 4-5, 6-0, you want to be able to give it a big huff and get down the other end. What are your thoughts on that?
Look, if I was coaching that team, I'd probably like to have that option as well. I think what we're talking about now is the actual coaching of the players. This is where the small-sided games is so important, because the coaching points come up so much more frequently for the coach to recognise and correct and instruct his players to go, well, these are the situations. So I suppose we've always had to come to this level where the transition of the game has meant at some stage or another we've had to improve our coaching. And I think we're at that stage now. Small-sided games demands that we have better coaches for the younger players.
And that leads to another point. Is it possible, given the numbers of people playing the game, is it possible to have enough quality coaches? I don't believe it is, sure. Just, we've got so many people playing, we rely on so many coaches to get good coaches across those numbers of people. I just don't see it's possible with our current structures.
It's probably not possible. I mean, biggest growth sport in Australia, in Canberra, I think we're continually growing as well. But to create a coach, how long would it take? I mean, it might take a decade at the high performance level of him being involved in all facets of football. So it's an ongoing process of creating a coach. We've just over the last two weekends put through 200 odd coaches on grassroots. So the interest is there, but it's a matter of keeping coaches on, to stay on and follow through. You know, a lot of coaches now staying in there because their children are in the sport. Yeah, and they want to be around them.
We're talking to Ian Shaw, the technical director of Capital Football this time, and local football fans can stay with us because we'll have a more in-depth discussion with Shorey coming up in a moment.
Oh, just a quick question for Shorey regarding what he was saying about the coaches. Do you find that there'll be a system in place to enable players that are coming towards the end, or even younger players that might have an interest in coaching, to be able to coach in, you know, coinciding with their playing? To make those coaches people into coaches at a younger age.
Look, I think there's a great opportunity for that, and I would like to see that recycling, if I can use such a word. But I'd love to see players coming out of our game coaching. Okay, I mean, it's what other countries look for at the highest level. Ex-national players, can we turn them into coaches? Doesn't always work, but sometimes you get a great coach. But we've got a lot of players that love football in Canberra. Yes, I'd like to see that transition into coaching would be fantastic. Having said that, we're in a different world sometimes. You know, life is busy. People have got jobs. Who can afford the time? And this is why, you know, we have to be so grateful even to the mums and dads that put their time in at grassroots football, because without them, our game would be faltering. So coaches, thank God they're around.
It's an exciting time for football, Shorey. The national curriculum is an exciting development, I think, and I'd like to thank you for joining us on the National Near Post Show, and we'll be back to talk to Shorey in a few moments on the local football show. Russ Gibbs, thanks once again for joining us, and you got a game yourself this weekend?
Yeah, we've got a game against someone. I'm not sure where it is, but okay. we just turn up and play.
Down there in some division?
It's one of the lower grades down in the State League.
And you can guarantee, Russ, wherever you're playing, that when you go to the Near Post, there's no doubt about it.
Get there first.
Hi, I'm Mylish from the Under-8 Pixies. My favourite player is Archie Thompson. If you're listening to the Near Post, get there first.
I'm Kay Thornton, and I've been playing soccer since I was 5 years old. You're listening to 2XX.
Near Post, get there first. The Near Post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
Welcome back to the Near Post. We're talking local football. We've got Russ Gibbs in the studio, and alongside Russ is Technical Director of Capital Football, Ian Shaw. Welcome again, Shorey.
Good evening, mate.
Just in case anybody has just tuned in, you never know. And anybody listening to the podcast, of course, won't have heard the first part of the show, so we always have to do that. An official welcome twice, Shorey. Right?
Coming back.
It's like the ABC, like doing, you know, like a repeat, but you know what I mean? We just keep going. So we're going to start with all the local news and Russ Gibbs coughing, and also all the football scores. Russ, you got some local news for us?
Coughing and spluttering everywhere. Got a few things coming in. Mark Schwartz is coming to town on the 23rd and 24th of June to meet the people of Canberra. Launching his book locally, the fourth book in the Meg series. There's an evening meeting and greeting at the Hellenic Club on the 23rd at 6:30 p.m. And on the 24th, there's a school appearance. Now, there's a chance to win a school appearance, I believe, a competition on the Capital Football website. Win a Schwartzer visit for your school, which is quite exciting. So go to www.capitalfootball.com.au and check out the competition details there. I'd love Mark Schwartzer to come to my school. What about yourself, Eamon? I mean, long way to go.
Why the heck he would have gone to your school in England, I'd never know. But
he plays there, doesn't he?
I believe so. Yeah, he's playing well, actually, at the moment, isn't he? Fulham have done well.
Yes, it'll be good to see Schwartzer in town.
Yeah, but I'd like to see all the kids get those letters in. I mean, let's get into this competition. And,
that's right. Let's get them in. Interest. I mean, the World Cup will have qualified for sure by then. There are three more World Cup games, so we're definitely over the nod. So, you know, get those kids out there, get it around the local clubs. Here's your chance to get on the Capital Football website and get Mark Schwarzer down to your school.
Yes.
And if you don't win, just go to the school anyway, wherever he's going.
Just pretend, you're at the school.
The near post says take the day off and just say you're going around to scout the school.
I'd like to think another school would get a bus and take them all over there.
Yeah, that's right. We'd get thousands there. So that's our advice. Just and if the teacher won't do it, just wag. Isn't that the way? You can't say that, Shorey. We can. as one of the finest members of the educational community in Canberra, I think I can say that.
Sure you can. As an ex-teacher, we encourage it.
That's right. It should be school policy, can't see Schwarzer.
So now, enter the competition, that's what we're saying, to win a Schwarzer visit for your school. Now, the Hawker development is back on schedule and it's due to finish mid to late June.
What do you mean back on schedule? Was it behind schedule?
Well, according to my insider sources...
Or was it ahead of schedule?
It was slightly behind schedule, but some hard workers put it back on schedule and it's due to finish mid to late June and we'll see some Friday night action, I believe.
Yeah, looking
Hawker.
Forward to that Friday night games.
Good.
I think Canberra City and O'Connor Knights will be using the field and of course... Friday night football's back in Canberra, so I'd love that to go ahead and looking forward to it.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay.
Issue 2 of the Capital Football email magazine, The Offsider, is out due this week, packed full of more features and news. And
what have you got in, Russ? Have you got anything?
This month rather, I've talked to Carlo Alife of the Southern STFA Strikers and Rob Bonnet of White Eagles on their ambitions to play in a possibly revamped Premier League next season.
Didn't the Goldman Strikers do well?
They did exceptionally well. They beat the MacArthur Rams on penalties in the Tiger Turf Cup last week to advance to round 3, where they're playing Fraser Park. And MacArthur Rams, obviously, beat New South Wales Super League team. And the Goblin Strikers, or the STFA Strikers, as they're known, obviously putting down a marker to be included in the Premier League if there is a revamp next season, because the Premier League licences, of course, are up for grabs at the end of the year.
Yes,
being reviewed. And final bit of news I've got is a bit of local news about Woden Valley. Meg McLaughlin has been selected to take part in the Westfield Under 14 Girls Competition training camp, rather, to be held between the 21st and the 24th of May at the AIS. A final squad of 22 will be selected from this camp for the AFC Festival of Football in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, on the 17th to 30th of June. So congratulations to Meg McLaughlin for being selected for the camp, and we wish her the best.
And Curva Coaching are organising the schools... primary schools carnival. There's going to be 7 zones playing, so good to see the carnival for the schools program coming back, and it's going to be this term, so there's only, I think, 8 places available for each zone, and you've got to get in quick, so get on to your teachers.
And a shout out to Colin Tully from the Tuggeranong Old Boys, if they're listening. 12 goals in 4 games for Colin Tully so far this season, doing exceptionally well in that division.
Well, I'm not surprised, because he's a Celtic fan and he's grown up watching Celtic, so he's obviously learnt the fine art of
off
football.
Off of Henrik Larsson and Scotty McDonald.
Oh, I think he goes back a bit older than that old Colin.
Tully's the most prolific scorer of goals in Canberra.
There you go.
Yes, honestly.
And if
he's listening, ring up and tell us how many you've actually scored.
Because he would know.
He will.
Hundreds and hundreds of them. He's on track for about 50 or 60.
He's about 90, though, isn't he? He's about 90. Oh, Colin.
But congratulations to Colin Tully.
Lovely goals.
For a great start to the season, and good luck for him for the rest of the year.
Yeah, okay. And, all right, Premier League, men and women.
Well, let's start with the men's Premier League and some upset results, if you like. ANU 3, Canberra Olympic 2. Now, I'd say that was an upset. Eamon, who's a big fan of the ANU cause, wouldn't suggest that. Robbie Schroeder gave Canberra Olympic the lead. And then 3 goals in quick succession from ANU. Danica Paris, Von Rogic and Edgar Daly giving them a 3-1 lead. Danny Maycor with a penalty, his first Olympic goal in the second half, reduced the deficit. But the win keeps ANU second in the ladder and... a bit of pressure on Canberra Olympic, who are bottom of the table.
A bit of pressure on Canberra Olympic, but a bit of pressure on Russ Gibbs, because Russ Gibbs has been telling me how ANU are going to get flogged by the older boys. We've been having a bit of banter here going
we
on.
Have.
So, every time he reads the results out, and I'm going, oh, another draw, another 3 points to the ANU.
I think you're fair to say that I did say that they would do well against the teams that play football. When it comes against, it'd be interesting to see how they go against the what I call the rougher teams, the teams that like to just launch it on your no small sided pitches. For
well,
these
now
guys.
That you've said that, who are those teams?
I can't possibly comment on that.
What colours do they play?
Yeah, what colour?
I'm sure we'll find out later in the season. They'll be the ones that beat ANU.
A great result for ANU.
It is a great result.
Fantastic result. It brings up a wild card into the usual top 3 or 4 teams that we have in our league. So I just think it's great for the league. It's a good result for the coach, John Mitchell. And, of course, for the young fellas that are going round and... getting all the hard knocks from playing senior football. But
we badly need those pathways, and John's creating a different pathway. And we're crying out for a higher level of football, aren't we, surely, from New South
definitely.
Wales.
That's been created for them at ANU. If we had a pathway into an A-League, that would take care of itself. But at this moment, it's doing a great job.
So good, Aaron Ross, anymore?
They're shaking up the Premier League, and congratulations to ANU. We'll see how they go in forthcoming weeks. Woden Valley's good start to the season came to a shuddering halt on the weekend. They were thrashed 9-0 by Canberra FC. 4 goals from Michael Spalletta, 3 from Dom Giampaolo, John Glass and Steve Lee completing a comprehensive rout at Deakin Oval. And not surprising, we'd say that Canberra FC topped the table after 3 rounds with 3 victories. 2 other results, O'Connor Knights and Belconnen United shared a 2-2 draw. David Leet scored twice more. That's 6 goals in 3 games for him at the start of the season. And he's also missed a penalty this year as well. So they're making light of the absence of Danny Makor at Belconnen. David Leet certainly stepping up and scoring the goals there. Goran Veljanovski and Steve Rezzo scoring for the O'Connor Knights. And the final result at Canberra 2 saw Tuggeranong United slump to a 3-2 home defeat to Canberra City. Substitute Nick Caggiano getting a brace of goals for City. Mitch Stevens the other goal after Dale Westmore giving Tuggeranong the lead. Mark Shields late reply. Not enough for Tuggeranong, who now languish in 8th place after 4 games.
And who else have we got then? So you've got the games for this week, or?
I haven't got them this week. I don't know where I've put them.
We'll check them. You can check them on the
piece of paper's gone missing.
On the Capital Football website. And we've got the Women's League.
I certainly do. The Women's Premier League. Woden Valley stay top after 2 rounds with 2 wins. A 3-0 victory over ANU. Erin Clout, Courtney Atwood and an own goal for Woden Valley, cementing their good start to the season. Belconnen United in 2nd place with 4 points after 2 matches. They beat Canberra FC 2-0. Brittany Smell and Amy Spence scoring the goals for Belconnen United. And a rematch of last year's grand final, Bell West Foxes beat Western Creek 1-0. Case of deja vu, Sia Macheski scoring the winning goal again as she did in the grand final, although she wasn't sent off this time. So she stayed on the field. And that's Bell West's first win of the season after 2 matches. Keeps them in 3rd place in the table.
Good stuff. Okay, and thanks very much, Russ. Any more local news before we...
That's about all I've got so far. Anything you might not add, the shorty? You've got some inside knowledge.
No, I was out there watching some of the women's games on Sunday, and it was a good win there by Woden. They've got a great young team there. They're playing some good football. And I think the women's game itself is... The standard and level of play is increasing.
As you said, they got to the final of the Federation Cup as well, and they look like they're going to be in the mix at the end of the year with your usual crew of Bell West, Western Creek and Belconnen. As with the ANU in the men's, it's nice to see another team coming through and putting their hat in the ring.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's good for our game.
It is. Any news, Shorty, around the office? A couple of football, anything that you've heard, tidbits or anything you want to give us?
Yeah, obviously Pat McCann got his car fixed finally, so it's been parked across from the school there for a year, he's finally got it fixed.
Okay, but there's been a lot of concern about that in the football community. So.
Oh, good on your pound.
Yeah. And also, so the seminar tomorrow, obviously, with the with Hamburger, the FFA, that's everybody's involved.
That's probably the most important thing I've got on my calendar is the fact that these gentlemen are coming to Canberra to give us an insight into the new curriculum, something Australia's been wanting for decades. We've got an opportunity now for all coaches to get on one page and developing some great footballers from Australia.
We're talking to Capital Football Technical Director Ian Shaw. We're talking about the national curriculum first up, or we will. Actually, I'm just talking about your job, Shorey. A lot of people know you're technical director, but there's a lot of people who wouldn't know what that means. I mean, if you're a football person, you've probably got an idea. But I saw when you either applied or were appointed to the job, I saw the job description, and I just thought nobody can do that job. Shorey, tell us what you do.
Look, nobody could have done that job. I'm still trying to get through it all.
But big.
This is the beauty about being in football. It's such a fantastic game that my job is all about a direction of football for Canberra, and that's probably why I enjoyed my trip so much to Japan, is that I got a good insight into the development of players. But my job's involved with high performance. It's involved with grassroots. I was out at Fields a couple of weekends ago doing grassroots courses with Pat McCann, our coach education manager. It's just one of those fantastic jobs where you can get out and meet the people and also see those athletes that you're involved with aspirations to play for Australia. That's fantastic.
So you're down at the grassroots level, but you're also up at the top level in terms of, you're in all the FFA coaching courses. You're meeting up, presumably you're in and around Pimver Bay from time to time and that sort of thing.
That's correct.
Give us a few names, Shorey. Who do you meet and who have you met, on your journey?
Look, the fact is that I'm involved with the FFA technical group, wherein the fact that we're involved with all coaches. The last meeting we had in Sydney, of course, Graham Arnold was there and Pim and others. And so those coaches are really interested in where we're going with our football, because whatever FFA decides, they get the end result. So the coaches need to know where we're going and what direction Australia's taking. And, you know, in some of the important meetings, everyone's there.
And it's a great time for you personally to be involved in football. I mean, football's totally changed as you've come on board. So you're sort of riding that wave at a technical level. So, and the national curriculum now being launched. I mean, I think we were saying before off air, Shorey, what one of the second most important thing you thought in football?
Yeah, for me it is, Eamon. 1974 World Cup, of course. And this, I think, is as high importance as that. A national curriculum for the first time. Structure of football that we can all learn from and develop our players to, I think is been required for a number of years, and now we've got it. I just believe this is one great moment in our game here in Australia.
I agree with you, Shorey. I mean, I think what the plan does, obviously people disagree with formations and all that sort of thing, but it's kind of irrelevant, I think. I mean, I think the thing is we've got a plan. We can now argue about where we move with the plan. Just to comment on that, you know, you've seen, and it's interesting just seeing the formation at 1-4-3-3, because we never used to bother about the one, but I mean, that's always written now. What do you think? When you see 1-4-3-3, some people have said, oh, you know, that's a ridiculous 4-3-3, and other people have said, I suppose, you know, well, coaches can adapt within that system. I mean, how do you see that 4-3-3? Is that, you know, is it set in concrete, or what do you think?
Oh, I don't think any formation set in concrete. I mean, you know, the 1-4-3-3 is probably how you line up when the ball's kicked off at halfway. But then there's so many formations of football that 4-3-3 can evolve into. So, you know, I think there's the starting point as every player understanding and roles and responsibilities in that situation. But like I say, you know, put two screens in front of the four, three in the middle, one in front of that, and you've got a 4-2-3-1 still working around the same principles as the 4-3-3.
So we shouldn't be worried about the numbers on the paper, really?
I don't think so, because the style of football will mean that everyone's involved in going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you, Shorey, but a lot of people got very excited about that 4-3-3 and started writing left, right and centre, and I'm thinking, what's going on? But anyway, that's just
so what you're saying is it's just a fluid formation there. I mean, obviously you can tinker with it and do what you like with it.
Oh, most definitely. This is the formation they would like to see, as the technical department would like to see us coaching through our state and territory teams at national titles. That will give everyone that's viewing the games, the technical study group, an opportunity to see these players playing in those positions. And of course, you've got to go from point A to point B to point C before you become a complete player. So this is one step, and then as you evolve into the older age groups and the higher level of football, then your learning and your education as a player evolves.
Other points from the... I know you haven't seen the full curriculum, Shorey, but just in terms of the development plan that came out, other things that came out that took your immediate interest? Accreditation of clubs, what grabbed you particularly?
Look, it was the fact that the document was so encompassing that it got right down to accrediting clubs in the way they're coaching their players. Even now, for our teams to go to national titles, the FFA requires that the coach be of an AFCB licence.
How does that, like if you were to implement that tomorrow, how would our, in Canberra, how would our coaches meet that requirement? Would they meet the requirement?
One or two.
Okay.
But we're talking about a starting point here.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Obviously, FFA would say we would love this to happen by 2010. Of course, in Canberra, it might be different. It might be 2011 before we can achieve these things. But I think they've set minimum standards, and this is what I refer back to the 4-3-3. For me, look, this is where we start. What we can develop from here is up to us as coaches.
Did they talk about coaching costs? Because obviously that's a big thing for people who... I mean, there's not that many jobs around. I think somebody said there was only 30 jobs or something, professional jobs in coaching in football, of which, sure, you have one. but obviously, and for people who are, you know, part-time involved in the game, to put their hard-earned money when they're not going to get any financial recompense, did they have any talk about that? Because obviously that restricts people from going.
It does. It probably divides the amount of candidates where they go through the community pathway or go through the high-performance pathway. Do they go from having their senior licence and then go on to getting an AFCC licence and going that pathway, which is a lot more expensive? So, yes, I can understand. No, there's not that many jobs available in football. We're talking about 8 A-League jobs, this year 10. So for the coaching ranks, there's not that many.
No, there's not. So, okay, what else taken your fancy in that document?
Look, like I say, I think it dealt with everything. I think the FFA's done a great job with the document. It talks about how we want our players to play, how we want them to be coached. It talks about the amount of hours that we require our athletes to have to at least give them the opportunity to be at the highest level. So I think the document covers nearly everything we need.
Can I just throw a few questions at you?
Please.
You can always get them wrong, doesn't matter, it's not a test. Firstly, small-sided games, I mean, we're all into it now. You get kids at 6, 7, 8, 9, and there's a big difference between some of the abilities. You know, you've got someone like yourself, a little Shorey, probably, you know, 2 feet, beautiful balance, and then you've got a little Flanagan who's got 1 foot and can't do much on the ball. And you put them together, and obviously, you know, somebody from your background, Shorey, mm-hmm. you know, the kid, you're going to be throwing them the ball at home and they're going to be developing, and they come up against a kid who, you know, may not be from a sports background, never mind a football background. The difference is huge. There's so many kids playing football. You know, will we be looking at two streams, do you think, down the track? Or is it a question of just chucking them all in together and giving them a go?
Well, I think what you first mentioned, 6, 7s and 8s, okay,
yeah.
coming through. So it's probably their first time in football, first time in any structured training where you've got to be here at a time and then train for so long and then go home. Look, I to be honest with you, I think the kids that aren't up to the pace within a year, they will be. The fact that all those other kids that you're saying that are better players, well, they've only learnt that from kicking around the backyard, more than likely, kicking with brothers and sisters, you know, sampling the game against the brick wall or the garage door. So, you know, I'm saying that the new kids that come in probably aren't that far behind anyway. Now, if you want to talk about athletes and other types of players that aren't really athletic, then it'll take them longer. But you get some kids, in, like young Casper Tafter, when we had him with the schoolboys. You know, this young boy just had every attribute of an 18, 20-year-old player. You know, he's scanning, his ability to control the ball, receive it with the outside foot, all of those things that he had as a 10-year-old. Now, where did he get that from? You know, we talk about where these kids get their sampling of football. He may have got it through his brothers and sisters and dad in the backyard, but that isn't available to every player. But the fact is that once you make it available, these players get better.
So at this stage, you'd be thinking that it's really a question of everybody brought in together for that young age?
I do, mate, I do. I don't think I'd like to be putting
to streaming
yes,
players. Yeah.
I don't
okay.
think so.
Just quickly to throw that on Casper Tafter, because obviously fantastic player in the under-17 World Cup, made the best 11. From a camera point of view, just, you know, observing him, he's really stumbled. Has that surprised you?
Look, it has surprised me a little bit because, you know, we're always saying that if you're a technical footballer, you can play in any team. So
that's right.
Is,
yeah.
Is it the Australian football because it is such a fast game at this moment? I'm not quite sure. Okay, does
but
he
even
have the
if
skill and
the
talent to play? He's a fantastic player.
Yeah, I mean, in the World Cup, he was superb, wasn't he? You know, and you think, well, that guy will have the ability to go on and play, and he may well do. But he's at the moment. I mean, poor old Kaz has sort of had a rough trot.
Well, he has. I'd like to see him play more football, and even though players might not like this happening, but he needs to be playing regularly. So if he needs to go and play somewhere else, he might need to have to make that decision.
In your opinion, do you think he would have benefited from actually staying in Australia longer had the National Youth Pathway League, National Youth League, been in there when he was a bit younger, rather than taking that step up and going abroad straight away?
No, I don't. Look, I don't think so. I think he probably became a better technician by going overseas. Okay, if he'd stayed in Australia, he probably would have got caught up in the more physicality of the game. Okay, and he might not have got those technical aspects. But then again, he may have got a bit stronger on the ball. Okay, so at this moment, I'd say he's in between. He's got the technical ability, just needs to, you know, beef up. And I'm not saying hit the gym or anything. Just it's probably more of a mental thing that you need to put yourself around and keep possession. But how hard is it? It's very hard in our league. You know, it's a very physical league. Just being in Japan, where they're so technically great, but they love our Australian footballers.
Let's talk about Japan, Shorey. You've obviously just been over there. What were you doing, Nick? Coaching course?
FFA sent me over for a bit of an information gathering and also to participate in the JFAC licence.
Fantastic. So you've now got your JFA...
I have.
C licence.
Yes.
Well done, Shorey.
Yes, thank you.
So give us some insights. Where you obviously looked at the Japanese system. I'm a big believer in that, you know me, I've got 100 on one ideas on everything. 99.9 of them are wrong, but it's the other one that gets through. There's thousands of kids playing football in Canberra. There's thousands of them in the school system. And our school systems, particularly in the public school system, we're just seeing to make it hard for kids. Instead of getting out there having something for them on their ovals, they've got to go to a club and it's all, you know, it's just difficult. Did you any thoughts on that, on the schools
It's interesting you say that because the JFA have just, they had a look at, in 2002 after the World Cup, Korea-Japan, they had a look at themselves and they said, well, our development pathway will not guarantee any success for the future. So they had a good look at themselves, if I can say that, and they said, well, 30-odd percent of our kids wear glasses. Nearly 40% of the kids cannot catch a floating ball.
No wonder they don't score goals.
They don't they don't play outside. So the JFA said, well, our base athlete is behind the eight ball already. So,
that's incredible. Yeah.
So the initiative they took was they went into schools, they upskilled 740 teachers within the schools to deliver the Golden Age program, to start after-school programs where they learn evasive, not just football, but evasive games and problem-solving games. So the JFA's approach was, well, if we're going to make the game better, let's make society better.
Yep.
Absolutely fantastic. And this is why it's a national approach to what they're doing. For it to work, they had to get the schools on board. A fantastic initiative. So the schools are on board teaching their program at 6s, 7s and 8s.
I think there's an opportunity here for, particularly in Canberra, like with all the kids that are playing, it's not just about football for me, it's about health, because obviously this is the game that most kids start off playing. And if they get a good experience, you know, irrespective of whether they stay in football, they get a good experience in sport, they'll stay presumably more healthy. And they may go to other codes, who cares? I mean, but, and I think the schools could play a bigger part. They've got ovals next to them, they've got the kids there at lunchtime.
I'd like to think that we could initiate some similar programs in Canberra because of our size, our location. I think we can do those things. So, yes, I'll be taking information I gathered from Japan back here and try and initiate some things within our programs at schools. Okay, but just having the fact that the JFA took initiatives to better their players in the long term, the JFA as a team, as a representative team, they go out into the community and help out the community. So they understand their place. They're lucky enough to be able to play sport, but they need to give back to the community.
Within their structure, do they set goals? But do they have a certain time frame of when they expect these changes to make results in terms of producing?
Well, they have.
Players?
By 2015, their pledge would be that they would be in the top 10 of world football. I went to a J League game while I was over there, and
who did you see?
Ural Reds versus FC Tokyo.
Big crowd.
Fantastic crowd. 50,000 people dressed in red.
In red, fantastic,
and one little 2,000 section of Tokyo FC in blue.
Yeah.
It was just magnificent. But in that game, there was three players that had come through the Golden Age program between 16 and 18 years of age playing in the J League. Okay, so they're starting to see the benefits of it now. But, of course, they've now got the J Village, which is a full-time living program for 13 to 18-year-olds. And
full-time live-in program, 13 to 18.
Yes, and they're just about to open their second village in Kumimoto Ukai, which is south of Japan, and that'll take on the 13 to 15s, and the Fukushima precinct will take on the 15 to 18s.
How does that make you feel, Shuri? You're the technical director of Capital Football. We have the same amount of players' enthusiasm running around, but we just, not only do we lack, in the boys' game particularly, we're lacking the pathways. We've got all these clubs that are run by volunteers, some huge clubs, 1,800 kids. You know, but we don't still have that sort of interconnected infrastructure of that quality. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a national direction. This is why it's succeeding. You see, it's where eventually the FFA will go. They will need to work with the schools, I think, and they will need to have all these programs tailored for every child to have the availability to be part of it. Okay, and this is the great thing about it starting at schools. From my point of view, I look at that and go, wow. Where could Australia be with a program like that?
Mm-hmm. Where could it be?
I still think we need to go back to the 9s to 12s in that golden age, because a lot of their principles work on the fact on growth patterns, that at 13 to 15 years of age you cannot teach new skill, but just reinforce what you've already learnt. The program's fantastic because the 9 to 12s, they continue coaching that same philosophy through the 13 to 15s and up through the 18s.
That's an interesting point, Shuri. So what you're saying is that kids between 13 and 15 don't really learn new ball skills as such.
No, not so much on new technique, just reinforcing the basic skills of the game, and, of course, then instructing on roles, positions, types and styles of play, formations of play.
So really up to that age, we're really sort of overload on player skills.
Well, that's what they've identified, and this is why I like the research, because it says at 13 to 15, reinforce what they've already learnt, because at that age of growth, of musculoskeletal growth and ability for motor learning, is so reduced because of the growth pattern that they said, well, okay, just reinforce during those periods. And when they come out maturation at 15 to 16, 17, they're just on their way again. Better athlete, better knowledge.
You did mention briefly earlier on that that they were very the Japanese were very supportive of Australian football. They do like the Australian football. What is it about Australian football that they particularly enjoyed?
It's like all countries around the world. I think it's our speed and our strength.
They're the very things that we don't like, aren't they? In a sense, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I think we've got them as a given.
Yeah.
We need to develop
to the other side of
next 20 years on technical ability, because we'll have that, because our kids still come from an environment where they can ride a push bike, they can run to the bus stop and catch a bus, whereas in Japan they don't.
Shorey, in your role as technical director of Kappa Football, you know, it's a very involved role. You've got lots of sort of responsibilities. You know, you've got, let's face it, you get a... Everybody's got an opinion. I mean, you know what I mean? I think that's fair to say, and they're not always nice opinions. Where would you see the future? What do you think the things are that we need to work on as an association, given the resources and the problems that it's basically a volunteer organisation outside Capital Football? You know, we all want a panacea to sort of solve, produce the best. Where do you see where we are and where you'd like to see us go and where we can go with the new curriculum?
Look, I think what has happened previously in Canberra has been fantastic with the academy. I mean, it showed that, you know, with extra training and proper skill sets, that we can develop good players, okay? So I think that was the start of everyone saying, well, hang on, with the right information, we can get the players up to speed. I think with the curriculum coming on board, just reinforces what Canberra's been doing for the last number of years, honestly. There were other states that looked at us and said, oh, great program, yes, we'll introduce these things. But now we've got the curriculum, now we know how to, well, now we'll have the information to how we're going to coach our 9 to 12s. Our next phase of representative players from 13 to 15. I think the game will develop, yes.
Do you see other, you know, as you travel around the country and particularly go to the FFA seminars, do you see other states or territories where you think they are ahead? Not necessarily in the, because obviously, some, you know, people say, oh, Canberra, you know, we don't do so well at national championships or whatever, but, you know, people sometimes forget we're up against 3,000 million, billion Sydney people or whatever. Do you see that other states in their programmes are further advanced?
Look, in some programs, yeah. I know this year WA, Andrew Patel at WA, had a special program going for his 10s and 11s, okay, and that was more of an expression session, a skills session, where they'd just come and do whatever they saw off the TV.
So that's been, how long, that's been something a bit different?
A couple of years.
Okay, yeah, so that's been going. Right. And do you think you've seen that coming through in their teams? Or?
Look, I saw a lot of inventive play by their players, you know, players with multiple step-overs. That works for them, but it's what they see and enjoy, okay? So yeah. They're actually taking things they see off TV and putting it into the game, okay? So that comes from having not a structured training session. It comes from just boys go for it. You know, yeah. We're playing 4v4, but gee, if you can get this and do that, I want to see it. So there's an expression session there. So I see those as being advantageous in all types of football anyway, at any age group. But there's... what I've taken the information from Japan, I see Canberra is perfectly situated for that sort of program, where we can get contacts with the 9 and 12s, and especially through the summer, October through till March. We don't start playing football here till May.
No,
so
that's right.
We can have a big impact on the juniors and their development. And, of course, that comes through then translating and transitioning through to our first under-13 rep team and 14 rep teams.
Okay, well, Shorey, thanks very much for going through a number of issues with us. I know you're looking at your clock. Well, you've talked us to death. We'd love to get you back here more, because obviously there's a whole heap of issues that we'd love to cover, and it's great. So hopefully in a few months we can get you back in and come talk some more, particularly when we've sort of found out a bit more about the national curriculum. I think that would be great.
Well, I think that timing would be great, because there'll be so much talk around the community about the curriculum and how it's all going to affect their clubs. So yeah,
and we do that, and we can put it up on the podcast on the Kappa Football website. Russ Gibbs, thanks very much for joining us. Have you got anything final to say on your Wacky World Week of football?
Wacky World Week of football. Three more points close to the title is all I can say.
That's talking like a true Man United fan or a Rangers fan, I'm sad to say. But
no Arsenal results, eh? Good
on you. No. All right, wherever you go, whatever you're doing, if you're going to the near post,
get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.